Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Thank you for showing up today. It's good seeing you all. Today I wanted to talk about all-inclusive study. I'm in session right now. Not that it should look like anything. It looks like this, and you're part of my session. I guess I'm part of your life, your session, whatever's going on right now. So to start off with, I was going to talk on all-inclusive study, or Henzan, which was written by Dogen Zenji in the, I think it's probably the 1250s or something like that. It's from Moon in a Dewdrop. This is one of the old books compiled by Kaz Tanahashi. All right, so the great way of Buddha's ancestors is to penetrate the ultimate realm, soaring with no strings attached or like clouds shooting below your feet. This being so, the world of blossoming flowers arises. I am always intimate with this. Accordingly, sweet melon has a sweet stem. A bitter gourd has its bitter root. Sweet melon and its stem are sweet through and through. Thus, the way has been studied thoroughly. The great master Zhongyi of Xuansha or Gensha was called upon by Master Seppo, his teacher, who said, "Since you prepared a traveling bag to go on pilgrimage, why don't you go towards all-inclusive study?" Gensha said, "Bodhidharma did not come to the eastern land. The second ancestor did not go to the western country." Seppo was deeply impressed with this. All-inclusive study means here to study as cartwheels, where sacred truth doesn't do anything, what degrees can there be? I mean, that's a beautiful expression, etc. There's, like any piece of writing, there's pieces that sort of strike me in that I have no experience of tasting the stem of a melon. You know, I'm picking up on this. I have to take it for as a fact. You know, if I had a melon and it had a stem on it, and I never have had a melon with a stem on it, then if it did, I would taste it and I would see if that was true. With a bitter gourd, it would be the same thing. I've never tasted the root of a bitter gourd. These things are, I have to take on faith in one way or another. When I see analogies such as this being so, the world of blossoming flower arises. I am always intimate with this. So things like that is wherever we find ourselves, where things blossom, where our multiple activities appear. It's very important to have that aspect. I'm always intimate with this. One of the things that's happening with Sesshin, obviously, in my position as a teacher, I have people come in and they talk about, in many ways, where practice is deeper, where practice is shallower, where they really feel that there's deep realization or understanding, where they feel that there's a power of meditation, where they feel practice isn't seen, etc. One of the reasons that I decided to talk about this particular case is the word all-inclusive study. You know, what does that really mean? For me, it means everything's included. So one of the things that I've seen with people coming and going is that for many people, practice looks like something. And it also includes certain things and it excludes certain things. Master Dogen here is saying that all things basically are practice. And he starts off by saying the great way of the Buddha ancestors is to penetrate the ultimate realm. You know, is to penetrate the ultimate realm. What is that? The first thing is that whenever you use language like this, the ultimate realm is, it sounds like another place, another time, the ultimate. I think ultimate means the last, right? If I remember rightly. Does it mean the last? Like you're like the last place you live is the ultimate place that you live. As far as I'm concerned, that's it, you know. But where you are now, this is the ultimate, you know. But can, again, as a human being, can you really swallow that? This all-inclusive study, this is the ultimate realm. Now, there is perspective in Buddhism. One of the schemes of Buddhism is to raise the value of. So when you enter into a meditation hall, the Buddha isn't sat on the floor usually. The Buddha is put on an altar. If there is a tanka, or you know, so that's a depiction of the Buddha or something that you value, or if there is a calligraphy, it's not put on the floor; it's put up high. So here Dogen's doing the same thing. He's saying, you know, in this, the realm, the ultimate realm of the Buddhas, he's raising that up, you know. And again, he's also using your name, Buddha, awakened one. And he's raising that up, the ultimate way of the Buddhas, your way. And he's raising that and he's putting that up, you know, is to go beyond certain things. That's what we do as human beings, but we don't value it. We don't give it value. We don't raise that up. Can you raise up the very fact that, you know, your five skandhas or ways that you perceive and live this world are of value? You know, you see without having to do anything about it, hear without having to do anything about it, taste, touch, smell. Think, is this the ultimate way? Can you really put value on it? I mean, if you can, then practice really is all inclusive. There isn't a place that you find yourself where practice doesn't occur. You know, and that really is the aim of practice. It's not to achieve something else or to achieve the thing of your dreams for the future. It's really to appreciate what you are. I mean, this is apparent in the Buddha's teachings right from the beginning. So he was really upset because the world didn't match what he thought. You know, he was living a pretty privileged life, like many of us as human beings. And then he saw somebody who was sick, and he was like, "Why should that be happening? You know, this is living. It shouldn't have that kind of thing." Yeah, and he saw somebody who was dead, and you know, why is this happening? This shouldn't happen. Then he saw, you know, the other mark of existence, where he saw somebody who was the follower of the way, and this was like, well, maybe if I do this, I'll find a better life. Now, it is kind of interesting that he went through all kinds of displacement activity like all of us do. You know, is no matter what arises, we have reaction to it. You know, is that maybe my life isn't matching up to what I want, so I'll go shopping. You know, or my life isn't matching up to what I want, so I'll have a drink. My life isn't matching up to what I want, so I go off and socialize with a bunch of people because they'll stimulate a whole bunch of stuff, and I won't have to look at what it is that I need to do as a human being. But then eventually, you know, through his own mistakes and following things that were easier than actually facing up to his own being and the wonder of his own being at that, because quite often we don't value what we have, therefore we look for something we feel is of more value, but it really isn't. It's just merely displacement activity. So the change with him, which is the root of session, which is the root of the ultimate way of awakening, was that, okay, you know, I just got shown a wonderful act of compassion by someone who doesn't even practice. So how can I really repay this kindness that the world is giving me? So at that point, it's just like, okay, I'm going to sit here. And that doesn't mean just physically, is that everything. I'm going to sit here until this is really sorted out, that my mind's at peace with it. And so then, you know, he actually actualized that. He made that so. And so what happened is that finally he was sitting late at night and then early into the morning, he saw the morning star. Again, all-inclusive study. He saw the morning star. And for the first time, he saw the morning star as it is. You know, life as it is, there was nothing like, well, there's something missing here. You know, everything is included in that. And then he could walk and carry this forward. It wasn't just a glimpse of that. It was just, yes, this is life. I have the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. And so then the point was then to manifest it, to carry that on. Now I'm using this as an example for the statement of all inclusive study, because then he had the choice. You know, apparently he's like, well, I don't think anybody can understand this. And he was dead right. Nobody can understand it. You can't work it out. It can't be passed on to somebody else. But the important thing, it can be lived. When you see this, that your life, the life of all things around you, are this wisdom of the awakened one to thusness, not the Buddha or the Tathagata Buddha, but the one who is awakened to thusness now, no other time, no other place. And so that's what he practiced through his whole life. That's why it's a practice. It wasn't a realization from the past. He no longer demeaned his basic awareness that includes, like us, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, thinking. Maybe the only difference between, say, us and him is the fact that he didn't obscure it. He didn't let ideas, notions, and beliefs come into that. Now, whenever we look at, say, other people's writings, people always write in a way that tries to show the reality, and at the same time it is like, you know, that's very important to us as human beings, because analogies seems to help us. You know, if somebody says, well, it is this way, then that's a very narrow way. But if we put an analogy in, we have to enter into that in an analogy. And if we have been, say, as that analogy has talked about, then we can bring life to it. You know, as human beings, quite often we live through story. Never underestimate the story that you tell yourself. Because hopefully, eventually, is that we grow beyond that story. And we become ourselves thoroughly, an outgrowth of that story that we tell ourselves. You know, for myself, is growing up, I took on various stories, cultural stories, the Arthurian legends, you know, about the person who is basically comes from nowhere, finds that they have certain talents, applies those talents, builds a team, comes together. Promotes fairness, promotes justice, promotes courage, all of these human things that are important, and to apply those in life until the point the story is no longer necessary. We drop the story and we see that those things that we really value and those things that are inherent in us are functioning on a momentary basis. So if you take on a story, make sure that that story is positive. It's not like, I will never be. How can a person from such and such, Neasden, become a Buddha or awakened or whatever? These things are very important. Now, with all-inclusive study, this really is the key to Buddhist practice or awakened practice, is that practice doesn't occur in specific places. Practice is all-inclusive right from the beginning. So as soon as you find yourself in the place that you are, most of you are in rooms now, this is a place of practice. It doesn't matter what that room is. Everything from the toilet to the kitchen. Make sure you wash your hands if you switch. The zendo, the workplace, all of this has the value of practice. Now, when Master Dogen goes on, this is also very important, is I'll just read the part where he has Genshi has the conversation with Master Seppo. The great Master Genshi was once called upon by his teacher, Seppo, who said, since you're preparing a traveling bag to go on pilgrimage, why don't you go towards all-inclusive study? Genshi said, Bodhidharma did not come to the eastern land. The second ancestor did not go to the western country. Seppo was deeply impressed with this. All-inclusive study here means to study as cartwheels. That basically is freedom, spontaneous freedom. So where sacred truth doesn't do anything, what degrees can there be? Now, that's a reference to Master Seigen Gyoshi, who is supposedly the spirit behind the Soto school. Not the spirit, but an ancestor. But it's debatable whether he actually existed, because there was there's a desire to link back to the sixth ancestor. So his story may or may not be real. But the important thing here, he met the sixth ancestor and said, what should I do so as not to fall into ranks and stages? So he goes, sixth ancestor says, so what have you done so far? He says, I haven't even studied the Four Noble Truths. And he goes, so then what ranks or stages can there be? You know? So if you've not conditioned yourselves in various ways, practice is right here. It is all-inclusive right from the beginning. So you look at this, and this is kind of interesting in that the word for pilgrimage and the word for all-inclusive study in Japanese are both henzan. So what he's saying in this thing is that when you go on pilgrimage or when you henzan, why don't you go towards all-inclusive study or henzan? So he's doing a play on words. But this is also important is that if you are on a pilgrimage, for instance, which was a common thing in those days, once you'd finished a training period, then you walked around and you tested your understanding at various places to see what was going on. So while you're on pilgrimage, this is also all-inclusive study. So in our pilgrimage of the day, you know, so I'm not sure what your schedule is like. Is that so? When I wake up, it's all inclusive study. Everything's included. There's nothing that's outside of that. When I walk downstairs, either in the dark or with a light on, it's all inclusive study. When I start to walk towards the Buddha hall, it's all inclusive study. When I do the bows, it's all inclusive study. To add these words is extra. It's life in itself. It's living in itself. There's nothing that is outside of there that is missing. The whole universe is included in that. And even that is too many words. You know, there is that aspect of completion. If not, it's always that when I become, then I will be something else. Something else will come in. At some point, this all-inclusiveness really has to be swallowed whole. I am like this with my warts, with my thoughts, with my beliefs, with my ideas. There's nothing that's left out of that. All of these things are ingredients. With my great talents, with my great difficulties as a human being, all of these are part of this all-inclusive study. There is nothing that is outside of that. You know, it's kind of interesting when people come to the center quite often. They're kind of upset by their lack of perfection because they think they're going to enter and cross the property line, and then suddenly this perfection will be there, suddenly transformed into a spiritual being, you know. But always remember is that as human beings, we come as a package. We didn't get to the top of the food chain by being nice. You know, these things have to be worked with what we regard as perfection. Love, compassion, wisdom are always combined with ignorance, anger. I can only think of two of them right now. But all of these other aspects, simultaneously with this, we are in this perfection. We are also working on those things that don't work in terms of our working with the rest of the world. Now, this is kind of interesting too, in this all-inclusiveness that Genscher's talking about. So Seppo, as his teacher, is winding him up and seeing where he's coming from. When you go on a pilgrimage, you know, where are you really going? You know, because if it's all-inclusive, it doesn't matter. You're never going anywhere. It's always this that is practiced over and over and over. And that's a beautiful statement by Seppo. You know, and that's what he should do as a teacher, is putting these things in that irritate until you're no longer irritated by them. These things come up until you really see it clearly, and it doesn't matter what the other teacher does. You know, my Zumi Roshi was always doing that with me. He would just see, you know, he'd say something that was irritating, knowing that it would irritate me, until it's just like, okay, Roshi, yeah, I get you, you know, yeah. You asshole. You know, I never said that to him, but, you know, it's just like I knew what he was doing and I really appreciated that aspect, because after a time, it didn't bother me in that way. I knew that was basically around getting me to be self-sufficient, all-inclusive in that way. You know, that's one of the things I like about, Dogen talks about all-inclusive study, but also on, you know, the individual. You cannot be divided. Everything is included in that right from the beginning. And that's the aim of practice, so that you really stand on your own two feet, you know, and you can say something about it. Here, he's got a great student. He's got Genscher here. Genscher, again, his story is also undivided, in the sense that he was a fisherman and something happened with his father on a boat where his father died. And he saw what he needed to do, got off the boat, went directly in the monastery, practiced or looked into his own nature, sorted out that basic question that was always with him. And then all his basic training was done in 2 years, and he became a really good teacher. A really good master. I'm not saying we should emulate that, but that could be your story too. Emulate that, do it, go beyond it. But so here he is, he's with Seppo, who is a really, really good, very thorough teacher. And he says these things to him: when you go on pilgrimage, just aim towards all-inclusive study. It's not that practice occurs in certain places. Putting on your shoes is all-inclusive study. Taking one step forward is all-inclusive study. Having the road blocked and having to go in a different way up completely is all-inclusive study. And so then, you know, Genscher just goes, well, you know, don't worry about that, because the Bodhidharma never got to China, which he did. You know, he never passed on something to somebody else. It wasn't because of somebody else that this occurred. All-inclusive study is right now. You know, it's a nice cliche, but where, you know, you've got to ask yourself, go beyond the cliche, where else can this study be? What other ingredients could you have that would make practice better? Now, you don't have to answer that. But the thing is, we have to deal with this. You know, it's just like with every one of, say, Maizumi Roshi's successes, they're all different. They didn't come out as a cardboard cutout of a Buddha. Their so-called awakening was the awakening of their own conditioning. The Buddha awakened to the human condition. But then, awakening to the human condition, he had to set the example of being a human, a thorough human that wasn't apologizing for, you know, the ways that he should be better. It was just like, you know, here I am. Now I'm tired, you know, so you see him tired. You know, now you see him angry because of certain things that were going on. You see him like that. There you see him hungry. You see him, you know, probably horny, probably all these different aspects of being a human. And then by seeing that and seeing that real adherence to being who he is 24/7, then that teaching then informs all the rest of us. By seeing that person in no matter what, not hiding who they are, but working as that and with that 24/7. This is what a training center is. It's not like somebody becomes a spiritual person by crossing the property line, and then there's nothing translatable back into so-called daily life. It's the driving the car is practice. Having an argument with your spouse is practice. Bringing out the truth is practice. You know, time is life. Life is practice. All of these things is never a place where you can escape that. You know, and this is the most important thing. If you can, again, I'm sort of going back and reiterating this. If you can really swallow this, the illusions about living can drop off. And then when, you know, a person like me, yes, I am awakened, but what to? Now, when I say I'm awakened is that I can say that. It doesn't mean that I am like the Buddha. I am awake. This is enough. What more could I want? You know, do I need to be like a Buddha? No, not at all. The Buddhas can die. Fine. You know, but the one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears on a momentary basis, that is the grace. If you focus on your problems, that's what you see. If you focus on the fact that I am living, living is practice in itself. There are challenges there. There's ways that things can improve. All of these things are part of the practice. If you find that there's something in your own life that you can't accept, that's exactly what needs to be looked at until you can swallow the whole of your own being at this moment in time. Not later or whatever, but enter into it. As remembering when we went through the floods, Dan's here and helped a lot, but you know, he understood is that looking at the hole in the ground was daunting. And some people were saying, well, you know, you can't do anything with this, you should think about moving. And the same with the fire and the floods earlier. But the thing is, I don't look at the length of time that it takes to do these things. It's the same thing with practice. I don't look at the length of time. Like some people will say, well, so-and-so has put their time in. What is that? You are time. You are life. You are the practice of this moment in time. If I focus on what I can do and what I am now and what's right in front of me, the things like completion take care of themselves. Maizumi Roshi, in his last words, which became Tetsugan's Inca document, said, play freely in self-fulfilling samadhi or oneness being. completion or lack thereof are of no concern. You know, I mean, those are words, but I see that that's true. And for me, what it means, you know, is that this is life. That has no criteria. That's no ranks or stages. So how can I enjoy this? I mean, one of the ways that I can enjoy it is not to introduce the intoxicants that spoil my life. I am this, I am that, I can't do this, I can't do that. I am this kind of, I have this kind of attribute, I am fantastic, or I am a piece of shit. You know, whatever story is there, don't introduce those things. And see the vastness and freedom of being in itself. There'll always be difficulties and challenges, but how do you take care of them in this moment in time? It's not about the finish. I'm not dead yet. The finish hasn't occurred. My Zumi Roshi was practicing until he died. The Buddha was practicing until he died. You know, this nice Japanese statement is that Shakyamuni is practicing with us today. Well, who was Shakyamuni? The one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears. You know, they also say Shakyamuni was only halfway there. I'm not sure how they quantify that. You know, because Shakyamuni is the one who sees through these eyes. Halfway, quarter way, one step, three quarters, seven eighths. It doesn't matter, the process. Here it is. Here practices. It's important to keep on going in that way. But in many ways, it's not even a matter of keep on going. That takes care of itself. Don't turn away from who you are. This is the arising of practice on a momentary basis. The all-inclusive study that includes every aspect of living. So at this point, I'd like to just open it up to any questions or comments, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so you can jump in. You can unmute yourselves now if you'd like to.
Hi, Roshi.
Hey, Dan.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
When you said, hiding who we are, I was wondering if you could say more about that. You know, there's this sense, you know, for me, there's this sense of being ashamed of certain aspects of myself.
Yeah. Are they the whole thing?
Excuse me?
Are they the whole thing?
Obey the whole thing?
No. Are they the whole thing?
No, absolutely not. Certainly not.
Well, that's the point, is that, you know, remember, you are the whole thing. Those are just aspects of it. And as human beings, you know, I just remember myself is like at one point, and it's a good illustration of this, is that I'd say my life is screwed because people are not coming to the center. And you can laugh at it, you know, but as a human being, that's what I would do until I went, well, wait a minute. Let's just put this into context. I have a good family. I've got some good friends. There's a nice sangha. I've got a roof over my head. I've got enough food in my belly. I've got some money. I've got the mountains, the earth, the sky. And I'm saying that my life is screwed because of this. So then what I did for a while is that I was going, okay, don't introduce that thought for 6 months. See how it goes. And at first it was like having a board by the side of my head. You know, it's going to bite you. It's going to come and get you. You know, and then after 6 months, I found I was happier because I wasn't introducing the story, which wasn't truly reflective of reality, seeing the broader aspects of being. And it's the same thing, you know, with like we went through with the fire and flood, is that at that moment in time, it's traumatic, but it doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. But we tend, as human beings, we tend to universalize and cover up that universal aspect that we have because it's hard to place and comprehend. And towards the end of his life, the Buddha was saying in his modified Eightfold Path, the eight awarenesses of the enlightened person, he goes, remember who you are. And that remembering is important. Remember the bigger, the broader aspects. You're not just the negatives. That's part of your ingredients. So I gave you the mindset there that causes right. the problem, but also the mindset of don't create a story around yourself. See how far your own sense sphere goes. That's the Buddha mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting the sense of wanting to put forth a certain face or a facade, you know, to other people. That, you know, I can see that popping up occasionally, and sometimes I, you know, I catch it and I look at it and I think, well, you know, what? Why are you, why are you saying this? And why are you doing that? And you know, and then it's like, okay, well, just move on, keep going, and you know, just. Look at that, you know. But you know, it happens, and it's interesting that even after all these years of practice, you know, these kinds of things happen. You know, being a human being, I suppose. That's the way it is.
Well, my Zumi Roshi had those things too. You know, I have them. You know, get used to it.
Speaking of the floods, that was something else. And, you know, I still think about that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that was awe-inspiring just seeing how nature can work, you know.
It was it was incredible. I mean, it was really, really, really incredible. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Galen. Good seeing you. Morning.
Nice to see you too. I'm kind of interested in this notion of how we move forward out of the stories that we tell.
Yeah.
And you know, it's an interesting thing to me, and I know that, you know, I have this duality in my head, but I have spent an awful lot of the time practicing, trying to remind myself that the story isn't reality.
Yeah.
And to bring myself, and so I pass that on to, you know, in my Friday night group, I hear people telling stories about who they are, and I tell them, you know, to break it down. And yet this morning I heard you say that this is very, these stories are very important.
Yeah, they are.
Come forth with them, and I wonder if you just see if I can figure out how to make them important, and at the same time get people to drop them. That would be
And you know, I mean,
it might involve a lot of things.
The first thing is recognition, and you know, and quite often people will pick up on their environment and talk about their reaction to whatever their environment is. And when I say environment, I don't mean just the natural world, but whatever, you know, place that you come from is. But then it's important to look in that story, because a lot of our values come from that, both positive and negative. And it's important to know that, like with practice, you know, one of the things that that is important in terms of the story is that to see how many times it comes up and how we interact with that, and then see that it isn't reflective with reality. You know, like even if I say, you know, I'm from Manchester, on one level it's true, but at this moment in time it's not. You know, it's got nothing to do with Manchester. And so that's important. And in time, by seeing how far the story actually reaches, is that you're able to drop it. It's got nothing to do with now. I'm not defined as that. You know? And then also to look at the things that the stories that we practice almost, that we take on, you know, could be fairy stories, could be war stories, could be cultural heritage stories that we model off, and then we take those on. Buddhism is also, you know, a heritage story. you know, this guy did these things and he experimented with those things. So we enter into that mold. And that can be a very positive mold, but like any mold, you've got to come out of it to function. You know, but you naturally outgrow and wear those things out. And when you come out the other end, you're not held by that mold. You may be held by your own heart as to how you behave within that, within the sphere of action that you're there, but you're no longer held by the constraints of Buddhism. Buddhism can never hold you. The life of the Buddha can never hold you. It can help you develop, just like the forms in soccer or in music can help. But beyond a certain point, you've got to go beyond that for your own expression. And your own expression is very important, but it's better to exhaust all of those things before your own expression really comes forward in that way.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, thank you. And then also remember, in terms of dealing with people, is that I don't know how many times I've told people, or I even heard it as a student, you know, appreciate your life, or it's about this moment in time. You know, there's that repetition and remembering has got to go on until it really sinks in. And because it's the embodiment that's the important thing, it's not the words. But eventually it will sink in. But that's one of the difficult things for many people, like teachers, is that you got to, you know, like for me is that, you know, people tell me something. I go, okay, I know. You know, you don't need to tell me again. So then when I first became a teacher, I didn't like repetition because that was my personality until I realized, well, wait a minute, it took this long for it to sink in. And so that repetition is important. And it's not like the person's going, yeah, 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 you think I don't understand. It takes a while to sink in, so say those things. But it's important then, you know, like with Zen, is like I try and talk about the same thing from many different perspectives so that maybe something gels with somebody from a different point. And so therefore, I've got to go to a different part of my own experience to do that. And then maybe it'll sink in one way. The odds are very small. But the reward for that going through, even if one person gets it, is so important. That's how it's different from economics. That one thing is so important. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And next. Hey, Jindo. Good seeing you.
Hey, Rashi.
Hey.
Good. You know, I liked your...
Oh, sorry, Jindo. Hang on. I muted you.
Yeah.
Can you unmute again?
She's messing with you. Yeah.
Go ahead. Try again.
All right. So you mentioned that one time you said, work as it and work with it.
Yeah.
I get the, you have to be it and not sort of make it something separate that you're looking at, but like from within, looking through it. But it occurs to me that can be dangerous just because there's so many, like a human life, there's so many different things that are there.
Yeah.
That it can be dangerous to work as it when that is something that's, you know, in the shadow, or if it's something fiery.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess it's kind of trying to figure out how you find the balance or find the time when to be it and then when to control it and, you know, sort of...
Well, I think instinctively we know that. I'm not saying everybody, but instinctively we know. You know, most of the time is that because we have these protector voices in ourselves that kind of go, wait, I'm not skilled in that. in that way. You know, that's why, like in the precepts, we have the so-called Theravadin or Hinayana level. You know, it's just like certain places I'm not very skillful, so I don't go there. You know, if it's causing me suffering, I'll allow myself to feel it and experience it so I can gather information. You know, but one of the things that happens, like for me, is that sometimes, like, say I'm angry. In the past, I would try and hide it. And I still will use that as a tool, but now what I'll do is when I'm angry is just, like, don't try and suppress it. It's just let it out, but let it out in a skillful way and learn how to do that. And for me, that's a very, you know, that's a very long-term thing, but it's become a lot cleaner through doing that. And each one of us will make mistakes in that way, but it's important to acknowledge that, to make amends and reparations in whatever way, whenever those things occur. But for me, that working as is very important because we are the whole package. And then to be able to communicate that to people, you know, I'm going through this right now. It's got nothing to do with you. So, you know, please give me feedback if it is, you know. That's hard to do. But in time, it's you know, it can really help in terms of the people around you.
I guess, yeah, I think I can see now how it's sort of going with what you're saying to Dan, too. It's like, is that all of it, or is that the whole of it?
Yeah.
So you can work with, or I can work with, you know, something as it.
Yeah.
Fully as it, but then also be aware that I'm more than that.
Yeah, so exactly.
So if I see that I'm starting to go, like, over the edge or, like, you know,
yeah.
too much.
Yeah.
Realize that there's more of me. There's I'm also.
I yeah,
also
exactly.
be that part that says, hold yeah. on, pull back a little bit.
Yeah. And then also, you know, also remember there's a time factor in there too. And what we do as human beings is we say, I will always be like this, so I'll quit. You know, rather than, you know, okay, this is a process. I'll enter into it. I'll do what I can with it. And then in that process in dealing with myself, I can become patient. I can develop patience. And then interestingly, because so I see that in myself when I deal with it, is then I can become patient with others because I begin to realize others are in that same place too. Whereas if I go, it can't be done, is that I never learned that from somebody else either, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it can happen either way. So sort of
yeah.
if you start going into a glum mood,
mm-hmm.
then it can go to you need to get patience and like wait and see that.
Yeah,
it's going to pass.
Yeah.
And the other one I was thinking of, if it goes into like, you know, the red mist descends.
Yeah, yeah. Usually there's no choice there, you know, with the red mist.
then you know, it's time yeah. compresses and you kind of have to like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
stop yourself, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Hopefully we develop some more skills that way. It's interesting, you know, I mean, I've been working, you know, as a kid, I used to fight a lot and the red mist would descend, you know, and then there was no choice. It was like, bam. But now is that I can actually go through that red mist, you know, and I don't, that doesn't need to happen. You know, so there is, you know, there is hope or there is, you know, a process through it in that way.
So that's the thing where you can experience it and be a container that
yeah.
holds it without discharging it.
Yeah, exactly.
Another person causing
yeah.
damage.
Yeah, and it, to me it's miraculous, but it takes a lot, you know, in that process it takes a lot of work. There's the feeling of it, which is the most important thing, because a lot of times with so-called negative emotions, we don't like it. And so therefore, it can't have value. You know, rather than this is happening to me now, what is it? And so the first thing, you know, for me was like just feeling it and realizing it's a very vast energy. It's like it says in the Heart Sutra, all dharmas are forms of emptiness, you know, including anger. So it doesn't need to have, and that's part of that emptiness, is it doesn't need to have a set outcome.
doesn't have to be
that's
discharged.
What we do. That's what we do. We, like, sorry?
It doesn't have to get discharged on somebody
no,
else.
No,
like a bolt
no,
of
no, no. You know, you can see how vast it is and realize I can't contain it in a way that I want to contain it. You know, but you can let it fill as far as it'll fill. And then where are you going to discharge it anyway? You know, I mean, that's an intellectual realization, but the feeling of that is that there are other ways that it can be expressed. And then through living, because we don't come with a manual, is that how can I communicate this to somebody else and them take it? And so in that process, I learned that I can't blame somebody else for this, these things. First, I've got to own it myself, and then I can communicate that to somebody else. And then I have to leave the space, which anger also is, for feedback, you know, in that process. And in time is that there can be the space where two opposite titans can actually... come to grips, and a positive outcome can come out of it. You know, which is an amazing thing.
So I guess it's opening up that space through
exactly
trial and error practice to get it big enough to hold both two titans, whether it's yourself and another person or two aspects of your own.
Yeah, exactly. Self. Yeah. Yeah. And for me, that's one of the most wonderful things of practice. You know, I just remember I'd been practicing about 2 years and I'll cut a long story short, but there was this guy that was being really unfair. And that's one thing that I hate is when something isn't fair. And I have to map that out for myself. And so he followed me for miles, basically, and caused this ruckus in a Whole Foods store, and I just walked out, you know, so I was doing pretty well, you know, I was getting wound up. And then he climbs into my car next to me, and then he goes, I want the money, you know, and all this had been sorted out, you know, and I was about to kick him in the teeth, which is the way that I would have done it that when I was younger. And I went, this doesn't work. And I just pushed him out of the car, and I had my oldest friend. No. Good idea. No, but I just pushed him out. I just pushed him out of the car, and he got the message. And I didn't cause violence, and I didn't feel bad about it. It was a boundary that I put in that came from nowhere. And I had my oldest friend who I'd known at that point for 18 years. I'd known him since I was 4. And I just turned around to him and I said, that was really something, wasn't it, Ian? And he goes, yeah, you would have killed him in the past, you know. But there was a change because of looking and seeing how that functioned and what worked and what didn't, rather than this is more comfortable just to discharge. Something really changed there. And that's what practice does when you allow it to occur. To see things as they are, see what works, see what doesn't work, and then something can come out of it. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was a showstopper.
We've got a few more minutes.
Come on, I'm going to have to go back to work if you don't say something. Don't let that still, small voice come out.
Roshi.
Yeah.
This is Ralph Bramble.
Hi, Ralph.
Welcome back.
I can see a frozen photograph of you.
There you go, because you don't want to see the real me right now.
All right.
I am in a situation where I'm trying to help somebody through a very difficult time.
Yeah.
And the person is really, really fighting it and is ruminating and stuck. And I listen and I listen and I listen. Am I doing this person any favors by just listening? You're talking about how to bring out the truth.
Yeah.
I recently had an exchange with him where I just basically just said, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I am. No, you're not. And I got very stern with this person, and he seemed to turn off.
Yeah. So that's not.
I don't know. Can you talk about how you bring out the truth? Some and the uses of force of anger, forces of frustration, because a lot of the masters used to do that. You know, slap people and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. That's a different culture.
Of course, I feel regret for doing that because I should have been this idealistic, you know,
very capable person. The thing is, you know, I mean, I learn through experience. I mean, I try things that people say, and I try things that I feel are appropriate to the circumstance. And then if they don't work, I try something else. Now, if you're saying something like you're not listening to me, that may not work because somebody may get defensive through something like that. It's just like, what are you hearing from me? And then have them repeat back what it is that they're doing. Now, you also have to remember is everybody's independent, and they're either going to take your advice or not. And you got to also be willing just to throw things away and allow people to go through whatever process that they're going to go through, because they are independent and they are going to do whatever they're going to do. But it is important to listen, because quite often when you are listening to somebody, they see that you're listening and they begin to listen to themselves, because it's coming out. Then they can see what's really on their mind. It's like for me, is if I'm going through difficulties, quite often I'll write the pros and cons to whatever behavior that I'm doing and what's getting in the way. And then by writing it out and seeing it in paper in black and white, then I see what's buried inside. And it's the same thing with listening to oneself when you speak. And then quite often people don't want you to fix things for them. They just want you to listen, because that's therapeutic in itself. And it helps them to organize their own mind, because if they're talking to themselves, they might be able to just go into a loop. As soon as you bring it out on the surface, the loop includes you. And then they're seeing how you're reacting to whatever's going on. So there's a lot that can occur there. And also they'll learn about their relationship with you in that process and what position that you play. And you always have to remember is that you are part of their story, and you're going to appear in whatever way within that story. And part of it is for you to try and remove yourself from that story and show who you are through your listening and speaking. And then when you say you're not listening to that other person, you are actually giving them feedback, which they may also then reflect on and go, well, in what ways am I not listening? Some people, you know, you're in a place and you will always be in that place. So you just got to learn from it. You know, that's the important thing.
Right. Thank you very much. I think you described the therapeutic process very succinctly.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes for me is that I'm going through something, and just being able to tell it to somebody is a knowing that I'm not alone, and that is an amazing gift.
You know? Yeah.
And somebody else will maybe say, well, yeah, I remember when I went through this. This was really helpful. And then you've got more information, and maybe a way that you can practice that resonates with you.
Not to torture this, but here's what really frustrates me is when people ask for my opinion, set out some circumstances, I give them my opinion, and then they argue against it.
Yeah.
I mean, what was this all about? I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to open this up to everybody. How many of you have been in that situation? Raise your hands. Yeah. Okay. So then that's it. It's frustrating. So then, you know, the thing is, how do I deal with it? You know, it definitely is frustrating. And then it's even more frustrating when people will do that, you know, for year in and year out too.
Right.
I'm sorry, Ralph, you know, I had to say that, you know, but.
No, it's true. And I'm sure that I was the reason many people, if you ask that question.
Yeah.
Was there.
Yeah. No, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you're almost off the hook. There's 1 minute for those of you that have got something they have to say.
Is this Jigen?
Jigen, you're on.
I've been struggling with the notion of story and kind of letting the story go, and something clicked. I've been reading Appreciate Your Life.
Yeah.
And I just read this, without a rope, people bind themselves.
Yeah.
And I thought that seems to be what you're really saying, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that notion of how we bind ourselves, to realize that we're trying to liberate ourselves when we are, in fact, liberated.
Yeah. I mean, even the thing, I'm a Zen student, the statement, it's a story. And that's different for everyone, you know. And that can be a very tight thing, or it can be a very, very broad thing too. But each one of us has to bring that on the surface and then go, in the context of this moment in time, is it true? If you keep on doing that, then you'll see what's really there, and then it's easier to drop these things that get in the way. The repetitive stories. It's like putting a stick in the wheel. You know, it stops, you pull the stick out, it starts going again, you know. And then in time, is that the story, you see it's irrelevant mainly. Everything that I've done in the past is irrelevant on that level, is that this moment in time is the only place that life exists.
Yes.
And practice
exists.
It's
so big.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll open it up for the social part.